You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Le Festival Nuit d'Afrique, the rendezvous of world music, invites you to the 36th edition from the 12th to the 24th of July in Montreal. Do not miss one of Brazil's most amazing vocalists, Fabiana Coza, the pillars of Jinawi tradition, Mukhtar Ghania, and Jinawa Soul. The electric blues of the fabulous Don Tyler Watson. Live moments of pure beauty with a South African performance by Derek Gripper and the griot of Corazal Kisisoko. For the full program and tickets, go to festivalnuitdafrique.com.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Screaming at everybody there. Call the gang, we leave them up in the body bag. If y'all don't get it, we taking all of them shots. Leaving dot, 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 leaving scene in the vibe. They talk like Spenny, my bar. That shit ain't heavy, my bar. They say they drillers, but they living on that Benny, my bar. Cause I ain't feeling my bar. That shit ain't heavy, my bar. Cause when the gang pull up, y'all know we be heavy with bar. Yeah, let them know what the drill is. When it comes to the facts, in peace, but realness. Ain't no drilling, I ain't no lead. I'm a microphone killing, an OG dead. Like, hey, who wants smoke? Who really wanna spark that heater? All these rappers play follow the leader. Too eager for smoke, cause it ain't no shisha. We bang on any type of genre. Gangs are the rhythm, that goes down yonder. Too long for all these newbies to conquer. Wanna try and test these lads, good on ya. You Australian or British? Okay. Are you a gangster or religious? All I really know, when a gang pulls up, on your face, they're diminishing. Finish that. Hey. They ludicrous, gotta rep their area cold. Throw it up, bury your souls. Let them know that I really gotta bury the clones. Words till I bury my bones. Tell them their bars are teats. They really need to medicate. Somebody tell them their bars are weak. Man, I call them 7 days. You playing with a heavyweight. Better keep your raps with a featherweight. From A to Z, when the fans wanna go from A to B, you the one they get.
And back alleys. Hip-hop ain't dead, it's this knowledge you spit.
You can hear it in the lyrics, in the way that I rap. It's so sick, cause when it come to that rapping, I go all out.
For the street, T.O. to South Cali. Hip-hop ain't dead, it's this knowledge you spit.
You can hear it in the lyrics, in the way that I rap. Mike Activist.
Street poetry, I kick moves, mountains.
Poetry, I'm sober with a soldier mind. Overtime, so committed, over limit, finish line. Breathing to my last drop, money's not my motivation. If it was, I'd be a puppet selling out to corporations. Dead Indian romanticized, enhancing minds. So they love me when I'm dancing, but they fear me when I'm standing. Sunrise, 7 lifetimes, glancing ahead and they amping. What's the man in? New clothes, mansion, new whip, computer chip, brain on bandwidth. I'll be rocking tan hide, watch how the fam ride. In canoes with the moose on the landslide. Never hiding my face, it's been decided my fate. Traced by starlight, raised by the Great Lakes. The page turns while we flip it off the axis. Rage turned into practice, we map this.
For the street corner curbs and back alleys. Hip-hop ain't dead, it's this knowledge you spit.
You can hear it in the lyrics, in the way that I rap. It's so sick, cause when it come to that rapping, I go all out.
For the street to your
Yes, 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 we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and for the entire month of July, we are celebrating our native creators, the original keepers of the land. And this evening's guest is Dawn Cheryl Hill. She is a registered social worker, RSW, and is a Mohawk from Turtle Clan who currently works at the Six Nations Health Family Health Facility, which is located in a historical downtown Oswegan. As a psychiatric social worker, Dawn is a member at Six Nations and grew up at the Tuscarora Reservation in New York. She received a BA in community mental health from the University of Buffalo, where she also received a Master's of Social Work. She provides counseling with individuals, couples, and families using an eclectic approach tailored to the unique needs of each client, utilizing best practices modalities of treatment such as cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, behavioral activation, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, therapy, brief therapy, cognitive processing therapy, narrative therapy, cognitive reframing, among others. Dawn's clinical practice includes working with clients requiring treatment for depression, anxiety, addiction, anger management, bipolar disorder, chronic illness, chronic pain, grief and loss, unresolved historical trauma, PTSD, stress management, rebuilding self-esteem, reducing negative self-talk, and other special needs issues. Dawn, thank you so much for being here this evening. That was quite the introduction.
Yes, it was. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you. How are you doing? We've finally, allegedly, passed through the pandemic. I mean, with all the other stuff going on in the media, it seems like there is no COVID-19 anymore. But how have these 2 years been for you?
Well, I have to say that they were pretty tough. You know, as a provider of mental health services, I have seen quite an increase in my caseload. I have seen a real increase in anxiety, especially health-related anxiety, and people who have never had any mental health issues before. A lot of grief because there has been many losses on our territory. So working with a lot of people who have lost, you know, their loved ones to COVID, yeah. Myself as well, my brother back in June of 2020. Yeah, it's been pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That has kind of been, for the past, I want to say for the past 5 to 10 years, mental health has become like a, I don't want to say a hot topic, but it's become of major concern to folks in general. Just from what I could see as a person who's not working within the mental health system. But the last 2 years during this pandemic is when I really started seeing an abundance of like people talking about mental health and people talking about the impact of the isolation. What if any changes have you noticed in terms of the willingness of people to seek out therapy?
Well, I think that the pandemic itself, you know, it's been really impactful on a lot of people because, you know, we are social beings. We are used to interacting on a regular daily basis. Yeah. And I look a lot at the children, how, it's been really hard on them not being able to go to school, not being able to see their friends, you know, not being able to play lacrosse or hockey or do any of the things that they normally do, you know, to get all their energies out. It's just been such a, mental health on its own is tough enough, but you add this isolation, and that's just another layer that just increases that social isolation and withdrawal, depression, just so many layers that, you know, the pandemic has just increased. And I don't know. Of course, because I am a provider, I've always saw, you know, that side of mental health as being something that we need so much more education about. We need so much more, you know, anti-stigma education out there. You know, one of the things I like to do when I talk to clients is that, you know, create a culture of recovery within them. I went to this conference down in New York State quite a while ago, and I saw a man there. His name was Dr. Daniel Fisher. And that was such an impact on me because that whole conference was about transformation and creating that culture of recovery. And one of the main things that people need in order to recover from whatever is going on with their mental health is to have a belief that they can recover.
Yeah.
And then to have somebody who also believes that they can recover, and then to have all kind of supports in place, and whether that's professional or family, people who are there for them to talk to. So, yeah, I think mental health is something we really need to increase awareness of.
I wanna take a little bit of a step back into time. Did you feel like you were called to your field of work? Like this was a calling for you?
I think so, and I think it's because initially I wanted to be a teacher, mm-hmm. but then because all my aunties over here are teachers, and even my uncle was a teacher, but you know, I started out in education and I did some placements and found that that wasn't what I wanted. And so I switched to social work because my auntie over in New York, my dad's sister, she graduated from the University of Buffalo in 1960, the year I was born, with an MSW. And so I kind of look towards social work as a way to, you know, help people. To me, it's just needful. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people think of social work and they think about, you know, CAS. Of course, I want to say CPS because I grew up in the States, but CAS yeah. coming in there and taking their kids. But yeah. that's not what, you know, it's about. There's 100 other things that social workers do. And I just really, once I started studying social work, sociology, mm-hmm. those kind of things, that's what really, you know, made me just know that that's where I was meant to be.
Yeah. I can relate to what you said about CPS, which is Child Protective Services, for folks who don't know the terminology, because that was my perception as well, that a social worker is one that's there to judge you and to, like, take away your kid from you and stuff like that, because I myself mm-hmm. went through a situation like that when trying to get custody of my child and trying to be able to see my child, but I had to have supervised visits with a social worker present. But my experience with the social worker was like, they were not there to judge me. They were there to ensure the safety of my child and just to record in a very neutral way what is going on. And then mm-hmm. now that I get those reports back, I have those reports now, I have like a record of that hour, 2 hours, whatever the time was with my child that I can look back on and read. And it'll be like, for me, writing is my vocation, is my profession, is my the tool that I use. So being able to look back at that, I'm able to like visualize all the moments with my child. So it became a very positive experience for me. Because so often in movies and in television, it's always these very violent, oppressive images of like a social worker coming and taking away the kids from the home, from the mothers, from the fathers, whoever the case may be. But to get a different perspective is very important, because that's like a tiny, tiny speck of dust in the realm of social work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so what you're doing, is it a specialization within social work or?
Well, I have to say that when I first started in social work, I wanted to be an addictions counselor. That's okay. What I went to school to be, an addictions counselor. And I did placements as an addictions counselor while I was still in school. And you know, I found that probably, I want to say 80% of the people that I was working with had dual diagnoses, co-current, you know, diagnoses. And a lot of them had a history of trauma,
right?
Whether that trauma was physical abuse, mental abuse, sexual abuse, there was co-occurring trauma. And, you know, that brought about a lot of PTSD and other mental health issues, right? Mm-hmm. So what I decided and what I felt was needful was that, you know, as much as I wanted to help in addictions, I also wanted to have the skills necessary to deal with somebody who, you know, comes in and after a session or a few, you know, discloses that they had been, you know, abused as a child sexually. I don't want to do what I saw happen when I was an undergrad and I was at a halfway house and I was paired with a counselor And that counselor went, oh, well, we're not going to talk about that here. Oh, no, no, no. You're going to, here's your referral. And you go over and you talk to mental health about that because we're not talking about that here.
Wow.
And to me, you know, that just shut that person down. That just shamed that person. Like, oh, my God, I don't even want to hear that. That's too much, you know. And so I wanted to have the skills necessary to be able to listen to somebody, to say, you know, very basically, I'm so sorry that that happened to you.
Yeah.
You know, it was not your fault. Not one bit was it your fault. You know, they sought you out and they were a predator, you know?
Yeah.
And so I kind of, that's why I went into to get my master's so that I would have, you know, a very good working knowledge of trauma, intergenerational trauma, PTSD, and had the skills necessary to help people in that realm. I even took a adult survivors of child sexual abuse mm-hmm. because I knew that I was going to face those issues so that I could help people in that respect as well.
Yeah. Like I just kind of just got in wrapped up in the story because I don't know, I have heard lots of stories from friends, from family about different things, and it's always such a tenuous thing to navigate when you're talking about these very sensitive things. A lot of people don't know how to react, how to console. Like sometimes it's like, and depending on the person's reaction as well, it's like you don't want to come off as condescending, you don't want to come off as like babying them. It's such a tricky thing to navigate.
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is to say, "I'm sorry that happened to you."
Mm-hmm.
That was not your fault, you know, and then go on. And as time goes on, talk about what a groomer does, what grooming looks like, and find out whether they could connect with that. Yeah, absolutely. This person groomed me. Yes, he did this. He did that. Yeah, you're right. And to them, it helps them to kind of take that step back and see it from that different perspective, because one of the things I think that when all is said and done, somebody who, you know, is a perpetrator, they want to leave that bag of shame and blame on the victim, you know, yeah, in their hand. Let them hold it, because they're walking away and in their mind saying they wanted it. They asked for it.
Right.
It's their fault, you know, because that's how their mind works. And so they walk away, you know, blameless.
Yeah.
And I address that you are not, you know, the it's not your fault.
Yeah.
No matter what they say and try to convince you otherwise.
You use a very interesting term. You use a term groomer, and you said that they were grooming the person. Is this specifically in the case of children, or can this happen to adults as well?
Oh, this can very much happen to adults as well. But I have to say, for the most part, it's, you know, younger adults who maybe are in their first, you know, relationships and don't quite understand, you know. I think about the term love bombing and gaslighting and all of those things, you know, and they don't know, they don't have that knowledge of what a very healthy relationship looks like and what a very unhealthy relationship looks like. And I want to add, overlay on top of that, the fact that a lot of, you know, Indigenous people, I'm going to say even myself, because that's what my book is about. My mother was in residential school. My father was in residential school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never got to see what a healthy relationship looked like.
Right.
Theirs wasn't. Absolutely not. Theirs was very violent. I saw violence on the daily, you know, on the weekend, even more so. So in my mind, violence and name calling and put downs and all of that was very normalized.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I thought relationships were about. So if you've got some young Indigenous woman or even young Indigenous man who's going out and getting into their first relationship, you know, what are they going to accept? What do their boundaries look like? they're pretty poor, as well as their self-esteem. And sometimes it almost feels like people seek them out because they can see their vulnerabilities.
Right. It's if you understand that love is screaming and yelling and physical violence, then that's what you're going to seek out, intentional or not, like.
Mm-hmm. Unintentionally, yeah.
Yeah, because it becomes ingrained in your psyche that this is, well, my parents love each other, they say they love each other, and they keep doing this kind of behavior, so it becomes almost ingrained in the way that you expect love to be, unless you're being taught differently. It's so interesting how influential our parents are in our lives and the way that we do things and stuff like that. Like my father passed away in 2021, and I find myself doing very subtle things that I know that he would do without thinking about it. Like he tends to clasp his hands and lean back in chairs and cross his legs over and rock his legs back and forth. And I find myself doing those things, and there's no moment in my mind where I made that decision, but it just kind of happens naturally. And for the month of May, we did a Mother's Month. So we dedicated the entire month to Black mothers. And I got the opportunity to interview my mother for that time. And she told me that one of the things that she wanted to her and my dad, when they were still together, and even after they split, one of the value sets they wanted to instill in me was respect. And I never remember them talking about it. I never remember them saying, Kim, you need to respect your elders. You need to respect, you know, you need to act respectfully. But as an adult, I'm now 41 years old, I'm talking to my friends and we're talking about our values, and my value that I'm always talking about is twofold, honesty and respect. Like, if you respect me and respect my boundaries, respect who I am and how I stand in this world, I will definitely respect you. So it's not an overt, like, you must respect people type of deal. It just was in the way that they behaved, in the way that they treated each other. I never saw my mother and my father argue. I never, like, they deliberately decided not to let me see that. If they had an argument, Kim, go to your room. You know, the same with my stepmother as well. If she had some quarreling to do with my dad, Kim, go to your room. I hated it. I didn't like it because I wanted to watch TV. Because why don't you all go to your room and go do what you want to do? But, you know, there were certain things that they provided to give me a certain way of viewing relationships and behaving. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Dawn Cheryl Hill, who is our guest this week as part of our tribute, our celebration of Native folks across the entire continent. We do have to take a quick break and pay some bills. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
she loves me not. They like me. He really likes me. She loves me. They love me not. I love him. She loves him not. He loves him. He loves me not. They love them. They love us not. I love her. He loves us not.
Come with me, won't you take my hand? Won't you take my hand? You take my breath away.
They really like him. She really likes them not. I love them. She loves them too. He thinks he likes them. They don't care if I like them. She loves me. I love me not. He loves her. Him not so much.
Six Bronx, footed corner street, curbs and back alleys, neighborhood rap rallies, T.O. to South Cali, the key of silence in the humble man's opinion, whether they Latino, black or Indian, no love at the daily bread food bank, it's a struggle man, what you think, the baby's crazy, raised off sugar water, mothers and fathers not watching their daughters, then they become part of the economical slaughter, I wish the native replaced Stephen Harper, struggles getting harder, can't use it. They torture. I should have stayed in school, became a doctor or a lawyer, engineer or accountant. But the street poetry I kick moves mountains. Rhyme like I'm 18 and found a youth fountain. Jimmy James, people's champ. How could you doubt him? Struggle. Every day is another test. Carry your weight, big up your chest. Struggle. When you up against defense, focus, strike back, precision, common sense. Struggle. When you gotta take a stand. Every child, woman, and man. Struggle. Every day is another test. Carry the weight, big up your chest.
No relaxing, kid. We keep it live where the action is. Mic activists considered a rebel till the track was spit. Heard through all the tenements. The fallen deaf ears is irrelevant. When I represent the elements and gather nations with my eloquence, I'd like to see seeds planted for all my nephews and nieces caught in the panic. We be the granite, soil, and the skin. The fabric of the life and the stars where it begins. For my athletes at track meets and young chiefs who must speak. For the guidance in my fam in times where you can throw it all away, acting wild in these tough streets. Understand it's a man who shines and a woman who gives light. A child with a dream, a warrior reborn from violence and fiends. A pathway to pathways and all the classics. Real life, not packaged in plastic.
I'm African but represent six nations. They got us free from the chains and the slave ships. On the underground railroad through the rest to freedom in the white north, but instead we ended up broke as Canadian men. No work, no pay, better off slaves than most went back to America again. When slavery ended, they were better off men with stable families while African Canadians in Windsor, Chatham, Nova Scotia, aliens, refugees on Turtle Island trapped on the worst land, broken down villages, shacks, the worst plan. Africans who came next from Africa and Caribbean, no respect. All Central, South American, Native friends are going through their struggle on sacred land.
Struggle, every day is another test. Carry the weight, big up your chest. Struggle, when you up against defense, focus, strike back, precision, common sense. Struggle, when you gotta take a stand. Every child, woman, and man.
break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Carob Patties wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milot in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Carob Patties, the champions of Montreal.
We're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we are continuing our celebration of Native folks, of Native creators this month for the month of July. And with us this evening, we have Dawn Cheryl Hill, whose scholarly interest includes trauma, impact of violence on children and families, sexual abuse, youth exposure to violence, behavioral interventions for addictive disorders and domestic violence, women's issues, poverty, inequality, transmission of trauma across generations. Her practice of social work focuses on more than day-to-day patient assessment. Dawn envisions herself as an advocate, human rights advocate, activist, a social worker committed to social justice, fighting for oppressed communities and marginalized individuals, an advocate of community engagement who believes in making a transformational regional impact. For over 18 years, Dawn has over 18 years of experience in a variety of settings and with diverse clients, including both long-term and brief interventions. She has worked as an adult clinician, a psychiatric social worker in a psychiatric facility, addictions manager, medical social worker, director of an independent living agency, director of behavioral health, addiction counselor, restorative justice worker, addiction counselor, restorative justice worker, drug court analyst, and intensive case manager. Dawn, like, I don't know where you had the time to do all of this, ma'am, but you've done it. You've done it. Thank you so much for being here. I love reading your bio. It's there's so much history within the very one-page bio. Thank you so much for being here. So, with that, how do you do all of this?
I just keep moving one day at a time. And, you know, many opportunities arose. And I just always seem to be in the right place at the right time. And I really have to say I was very grateful, full of gratitude for Sadhu Guiso, you know, creator, he who made me, because I always felt like he was kind of part of my life, putting me where I needed to be, when I needed to be, specifically with January Marie Rogers. Like, you know, we crossed paths, and never in my life did I think that I would have a book and be a published author. That was never my intention. And, you know, January, I went into her poetry reading at Chiefswood, which is the homestead of E. Pauline Johnson. So she was reading E. Pauline Johnson's poetry and her own. And we had dinner there with our group and went on a little tour of Chiefswood. And it was just a beautiful evening. And so on the way out, you know, we talked as we walked to our car. And I mentioned that I like to write, that I am a writer. Yagalado, she tells stories. That's what it means in Mohawk. Mm-hmm. And I just write because to me, writing is healing. It settles my mind. It clears my mind. And to me, that's just, yeah, there's so many things that have happened in my life. And I don't know, just, I don't want to say happenstance or coincidence. I think they're all very much organized by a higher power. So yeah, just many, many things. So I was working at the University at Buffalo, mm-hmm. and the School of Social Work moved to my floor. And at that time, I was still doing my undergraduate work in community mental health. And, you know, I start talking to them. I start talking to the assistant dean. And she told me that, you know, you could apply to our program. We come up with this new program. They're just starting it. And it's called a BA/MSW. And so she said, you know, I know you're in school now, and I had finished all my core courses. She goes, why don't you apply? You could come right into the program. You wouldn't even have to take your graduate record exams because you're already in, you know, as a student. Right. So I did. And that's kind of how I ended up with an MSW. Again, not my intention. I just wanted a BA. I was just going to be happy with that. And here I ended up with a BA/MSW. Again, I was in the right place at the right time, talking to the right people. And that's how many things have happened in my life.
Yeah, what they call it? Serendipity, I think it's called.
Just, synchronicity, or
yeah, just being in the right place at the right time to yes. and asking the right questions to mm-hmm. the right folks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like you're telling a bit of my story within your story, because that's always how things end up happening. It's like I try and get certain things to happen and they're not happening, and then I say, you know what, let me just relax and like ask people questions, and then this person has a solution to a problem I've been struggling with for 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes even 10 years. And it's like, oh, well, it's like this, and it's this simple. And I'm like, wait, what? But what have I been doing for the past 10 years?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I was talking with my son, and I have a, you know, a belief in a higher power, and he does not. And so, you know, I told him about different experiences where, you know, things have worked out so beautifully. Like, I couldn't have made them happen if I had, you know, $1 billion and was paying people to orchestrate in the background. I couldn't have done it. No. But they just do. They just fall into place, lockstep, the way it's supposed to be. And he says, oh, no, that's not God. That's just, you know, that's you because you just do a lot of talking and networking. That's your networking.
Right.
Like, no, it's so much more than networking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can't. Even if you network, you can't predict who's going to be on your path. Exactly. You know, you can't. It's like if you're walking down the street, you can't predict who you're going to meet. You know, I love telling this story of like,
I want to hear it.
I used to live downtown in Montreal, and I used to work at Black Theater Workshop, which was literally one bus ride straight to the work. I didn't have to go take any turns, change connections, nothing. It was just, I get on the bus, like, a block away from my house, and I get off the bus less than a block away from work. Sometimes, I'd be coming out of work, and I get this, don't take the bus, go somewhere else. Take another route. Walk home. Take the metro. And invariably, either I would get home safely, nothing, quote unquote, nothing happens, or I would see somebody I hadn't seen in a while. And mm-hmm. and we'd have this amazing like moment of like, oh my God, it's so good to see you. And even if we take 2 minutes to talk, or sometimes I had one friend that whenever I saw her, and it was always random, it was never planned, we'd end up talking for 2 to 3 hours, and we'd be standing up wherever we met, talking. Then we'd say, oh, we have to leave, and then we'd start walking somewhere else, but then we'd stay there and continue talking. But invariably, I'd always get home safe, and I'd always have a positive experience by listening to that intuitive kind of spiritual angel on my shoulder, whatever people want to call it. I'd always have like a positive experience, and then people would say, oh, well, what about those times when you never met anybody? I said, perhaps that voice, that intuition, that angel was keeping me safe. Maybe there was somebody who I wouldn't have wanted to have a experience with on that particular path. You know, someone I may have a negative experience with as opposed to a positive experience. So long as I reached home safe, like, that's a positive experience for me. So it's that following your intuition, your gut is lost on so many people, because I feel like the spirituality of life in general has been reduced to Christianity or religion, a formalized religion, and everything else is considered invalid. And I find that to be tragic because, I mean, if we go according to the Bible, God created us in His own image, and if we're created in His image, shouldn't we be imbued with some of the powers that He supposedly has? Or is it like He only... it was an exclusive kind of thing.
It's interesting, and I have two stories to jump in with that. My first one is, my first class as a graduate student at the University of Buffalo, my instructor was Dr. Andy Safer, and the first question he asked us as a class, and I don't remember what class it was, he said, how many of you in this room believe in intuition? And of course, my arm shot up, but not everybody's did.
Right.
And he said, so for those of you who don't believe in intuition, I want to tell you that it really is a gift. And it is a gift that you need to own and you need to hone. He said, because if you don't, you may one day lose your life because you don't listen to it, because you reject it. You think, oh, I'm being silly. I can't. Oh, no, whatever that is. I'm just going to still go ahead and do what I was going to do. But no. And he shared a story where he was working. I don't remember if it was the Bronx, because he was like from New York City area. And he really had that accent, too. I just loved it. Anyway, he was telling the story how he was, you know, on a home visit, went up to this brownstone, the woman answered the door, you know, and he had that gut instinct.
We're about to run out of time on our Zoom, so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back in and get back into the story. My deepest apologies. We'll start the story over. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
On the scene, it's the bloke from the 4300, about to go hectic. I triggered all of these dogs, cause my bar's too heavy like a deadlift. Got a proton flow, it's electric, finna go reckless. Sure, already know who the best, that's me. These rappers are all for the show, somebody put them up on left, put them up. Since when do we ever need shakes? Since when? Or need to run with a gun? Never. I was taught when the beef comes round, put your 2 feet down, have a one-on-one. That's us. Nowadays, everybody has a knife, and stick it in the air like curry. Nowadays, everybody wants smoke, like who wants smoke? Give them my dummy, I'm different, brother, I'm different. Take a little trip to the west side of Brisbane. The boys in the back never stay distant. Yeah. LMA bars, how I got them all tripping. My doctor told me, listen, cuz you gotta let him know. I stepped up to the plate and told my doctor, fucking no. Now I'm kicking back, making tracks for the hood, cuz. Making all these other clowns here look dumb. Aye. Everybody just wants to be a hoodlum. Fill them up deep, cuz they looking like shook. I'm down for the hood. 4-3 shit, let them know what's good. What's good? Bar after bar, but they all look shook. And a middle finger up to this bitch ass six. Aye.
Don't fuck me, bro.
Tell them come get me, I swear they'll never forget me. Must be teachers the way they want to test me. Let them hate cause the flow's too hefty. Hop on the mic and you better come secky. Aye. Look, better say that shit with your chest. If not, then you better say less. Brisbane coming up from the west. Say my name out loud so you know who's next. Better say that shit with your chest. If not, then you better say less. That's enough for sending the threats. Come round here and you know what's next. From Monday to Friday, I'm steady trying to make this stosh. And I swear that I'm always offside, cause I'm always in front when shit kicks off. They don't wanna see this side pissed off. Switch city, bro, we ain't never been soft. Keeping the peace, but if they want beef, just know that we coming and serving it hot. We ain't never been making no noise, all my usos keep a low key. I got boys in the 4300 to the 01, now to the 03. So don't chat to me about soldiers, cause I got brothers that love this shit. Got no kids, but you think I'm a father, from the way that I raise these fists. Kick back, kick back, tell them all kick back. If it's them versus us, it's a mismatch. If they want beef, then send them a big match. I'm done, I did that. Now all I gotta do is sit back. 4300, cause I'm with that. Hey, finish my uso, hit that. Better say that shit with your chest. If not, then you better say less. Brisbane coming up from the west. Say my name out loud so you know who's next. Better say that shit with your chest. If not, then you better say less. That's enough for sending the threats. Come round here and you know what's next.
Say that shit with your chest.
I'ma take you back to Moldy archaeology. When the queen sent the ship to steal the Moldy property. Signed the paper, then they demolished the culture. They took away the land and claimed that Moldies were the roaches. They tried to wipe away the time, uncles off our shoulders. British soldiers killed a woman with the guns up in their holsters.
They tried to kill the Modi tongue with their guns, tried to seize the Waikato, so we smacked them with a tiger, huh? Anybody disobey, then they fire up, light us up, block us in the funny and proceed to light it up, saying they discovered the land we already called home. So they lined us up and put the muskets to our jawbones, raped a woman with their raw bone, tried to populate a woman with their hormones, took the money from our souls, put their flagpoles in some holes, and they claimed it as their own. Sold the land to the white man, cause we didn't have a choice. Ripped the tongues from our throats, so we didn't have a voice. Did the opposite of what the treaty said. Infiltrated Modi land and tried to make our iwi dead. Confiscated Modi artifacts, turned them into artifacts. Said they made us civilized and claimed that they had started that. Tried to take the wehi from a hucker's lap. Said to slaughter all these people just to get our workers back. Modi culture, man, they said they had enough of that. And that's a verse about the Europeans and the motherland. Same, affected by their reign, a terror upon the name of our people. No equal opportunities were given, just disease-ridden children and shit for them to live in. The white politician would rather sweep it to the side than to let my people mention any truths of genocide. They provide all the guns that we use to kill each other. Brothers killing brothers, sons killing mothers, damn. Oh, what a shame, it was all in the name of Christianity. Insanity is the cause of this pain, but they continue to ignore. What will it take to reform a damaged fucking race, cause the pain is still raw. These ships set sail to explore and discover, but the land they would discover was full of people with money. Genocide, it's a white man's pride. I said, genocide, it's a white man's pride. And now the light will rise as the white man hides and continue to express how we feel inside. And now we're forced to accept it as the past. When it's conversated in the schools, the conversation never lasts. Lies and destruction was the function of the British. Now they face.
Yes, 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 we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we are continuing our celebration of Native folks here in Canada and across the entire continent. And our guest is Dawn Cheryl Hill. We deeply, deeply apologize, Dawn, because we're recording this in advance. The Zoom started counting down, and we were down to a minute, and I didn't want it to cut off in the middle of your story. So please, you said you had, before the break, you said you had two stories that you experienced, and you were talking about the story where you were in a class or a session where the teacher asked about intuition.
Okay, so he asked how many of you here believe in intuition, and not everybody put up their hand, and he said, for those of you who don't, you need to. You need to own it. You need to hone it. And he shared his story where he was knocking on this brownstone there to do a home visit. And before he got up to the door, it was like, no, back up, make an excuse, whatever, do something. Don't go in this house. Mm. So she answers the door and he says, oh, you know what? My boss just called and I got to get back to the office, but I'll call you back. And he could see terror or horror. I don't know exactly on her face.
Right.
He said, so he said, I'm going to call you right back. I'm just going to, you know, head back to the office. I'll give you a call right back immediately and we'll reschedule. And he walked away and he went around the corner and he called, I don't know, probation, parole, somebody. And so she had been a victim of domestic violence, and whoever her perpetrator was, he was actually there. He had just gotten released. And so had he walked into that apartment, he might not have walked out. And that was a story he shared with us. And then another one, you know, you shared this story of you walking down the street. And I was out for a walk one morning. I like to walk every morning. And as I was walking back to my apartment, just as I was walking, there was, you know, I'm walking through a parking lot, and just as I was walking past this car, the car door opens, this woman steps out, and she looks at me, and I look at her, and I'm like, hey, and she's like, hey, what are you doing here? She goes, I said, I'm out walking. No, what are you doing? She goes, come and see me at noon. I think I have a job for you.
Wow.
And so, I started a new job on Monday.
Wow.
That was a Thursday. Wow. So to me, I couldn't have, how could I have organized that, you know?
Yeah, you can't predict those things. You can only put out what you want in the universe and then actively move towards it. but you can't predict when you'll get it. You know, you can't predict. It's not like writing a grant for something where you know the grant is due at a certain time, and then if you get the grant, it'll come, you know, on this date. Like, you can't predict. You can't predict humans and the interaction that you're going to have with them. You can only... Another quick story. I love another one that I like to tell as well. When I was young, my father had a Wrangler Jeep, and his Wrangler Jeep was his baby. Like, I was his son, his only son, but don't mess with his Jeep. And I had just gotten my license. It was 1997. I had just gotten my license, and our tradition in the family was that every Friday night or Saturday, we would go down to the video store and rent 5 or 6 videos, and we just have like a mini movie marathon. So this is pre-Netflix for anyone who's like non-VHS savvy. This was pre-DVDs when you had to actually rewind the cassettes. And so my dad, I was home that day. I think I came home from school or wherever I was. And my dad came into the house and he was like, "Hey, you want to drive my Jeep down?" And we lived in a mountain where it's like very hilly and stuff like that. Down and go rent some videos. And that little voice, that little angel said, "No." And my ego... that was like, "What? My dad's gonna let me drive his Jeep? He never does that." Said yes. So I took the car, and this in Jamaica, there was no seatbelt law at the time. This was September. Seatbelt law came into effect in November. I drove down, no seatbelt on, nothing, having the time of my life, drove, and then I took this shortcut, right? Which is not really a shortcut, it's a back alley. That if any teenager says they're taking a shortcut, they're probably going to speed the car or they're going to get up to some kind of trouble. And I took this shortcut, sped down the road and reached the main intersection, drove, got to the video store, rented some videos. And as I'm pulling out of a parking lot, I hear something say, "Put on your seatbelt." I didn't even think twice. I put it on. Click. I'm driving back up. I see the turn to go on this quote-unquote shortcut. Something says no. I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I turn onto the shortcut. Something says don't speed. I'm like, "What?" I accelerate, and I total the car. The steering wheel was now almost horizontal. Like, it was a complete write-off. I couldn't even get out of the door. I had to climb through the window. All I had was a tongue laceration. But imagine if I hadn't listened to that first intuitive voice that told me to put on my seatbelt. Because, again, we didn't have a seatbelt law.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't have to wear a seatbelt. I didn't have any fear of the police seeing me and giving me a ticket, and I drove down without it. If I hadn't, I wouldn't be sitting here today. I would be either a paraplegic or I'd be dead. Because, and then the other thing that my dad did that was extremely unusual, he gave me his cell phone. He had never done that before. So yet another thing, like my dad, you know, he never would admit it because he wasn't very much of a spiritual person, but he followed his instincts a lot. And he did follow his intuition a lot, but he and I both did things that were not usual to us at that time. And ever since then, I do my best to listen to that intuition because it's like, whew, you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. Yeah.
Well, I got a quick story. I hope I have time.
Oh, absolutely.
my sister, when I was still living in the States, my sister and I would go to this church on the reserve at Tuscarora. It's called Tuscarora Indian Mission. It's kind of non-denominational. So it was Mother's Day, 1997. I had four children, but my oldest son, I don't think he was home. I think he was away. So I was getting the three younger ones ready to go to church. And I had dressed my daughter. She was only two. And put her in her lovely outfit. You know, I call it, I got her bedugalied. She was bedugalied, okay, ready to go to church. And I was getting my two younger boys ready. And so I'm not paying any attention to her. I just think she goes downstairs and she's watching TV in the family room.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden my sister walks in and she's got Jessica in her arms. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And she goes, she was like, just white. She's like, just like ready to pass out looking like. I said, what? She goes, I was on my way to church. I was going by. I was at church just about to turn in. And something said, go to Don's. And she thought, and it said, go to Don's. So she listened and she drove up the road and turned to come to my house. And she said, as she was coming down the road, she could see Jessica outside with a basketball. She threw the basketball. Of course, she's two. It don't go in. And it starts rolling down the driveway. And she sees this big white truck coming, a big white truck. So she's beeping her horn and she's flashing her lights and Jess is paying no attention to this. She's, wow, you know, focused on the ball, that yeah, basketball rolling out onto the road. And it rolls right out, crosses the yellow line, and she's there to pick it up. But lucky that, you know, my sister listened to her intuition and the truck was stopped right there.
Wow.
And so she got out and she got Jess and she brought her in and she told me what happened. And my legs gave out and I fell on the floor with her. And or, you know, yeah, she didn't give her to me. I just fell down because, yeah, and to me, you know, Creator, City of Guiso, higher power, you know, sent her to save her. And last weekend I went to Penn State and Jessica graduated as a physician's assistant.
Wow.
And I believe that, you know, Creator has work for her to do. I had a reading done and the reader said that I have the sun shining on me. Mm-hmm. She said, but you have a daughter, like you've mentored her and there is two suns shining on her. She has work to do. And so to me, I'm so grateful that my daughter is still here and that she is doing the work that she needs to do.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is crazy. Like you can't predict these kind of things. These kind of things, you have to be open to it and you have to be receptive to the energy and the messages that you're being sent. You just...
How could that be attributed to networking?
Right.
No, networking with Creator, angels, whoever, spirit.
If that's what you want to call that, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. that kind of brings me to my next question, which is, to what extent do you take in cultural background and perhaps healing practices when working with one of your patients?
I really want to include a lot of traditional healing. Lately, you hear so much about land-based healing being bandied around, and I've really looked into it, and I think I include it quite a bit. And recently, I went and I was able to go to a maple tapping
mm-hmm.
Workshop, and I asked the elder who was doing that, I said, what is land-based healing? I need to know. I want to make sure that I'm incorporating that into my practice. And all he said was, it's being out here. It's being outside. It's just living. It's just living and acknowledging all that Creator has put here to sustain us, you know? And then I heard about this one person. They... you know, kind of came to me and said, hey, oh my God, I heard of this great big cool new, you know, therapy. It's amazing, you know. I said, what is it? Oh my goodness, yeah, what is it? Oh, it's very traditional. It's just wonderful. You got to do it. I said, well, what is it? Well, you take your shoes off and you go stand out in the grass. And I'm like, yeah, that would be amazing, because I remember quite a while ago when I was still an undergraduate, I interviewed this elder. I had to do that for one of my classes, and his name was Harry Hill. He's been gone for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry, I said, where do you want to be interviewed? And he said, I want to be interviewed in my garden. He said, I want to be interviewed in my garden because that is where I go to be at peace. Yeah. That is where I go to find peace in my day. He said, and to have my hand in the earth that's so warmed by the sun, to be myself, feeling the sun on my back and warming me, feeling that energy transfer between us, between me and Mother Earth. That's where I want to be. That's the healing place to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is powerful, because I find that people underestimate the power of the actual, like, Mother Nature, like, mm-hmm. the plant, like, everything. One of the things that I found, and I mean, now that I think about it, it is very logical. Almost all of the medicine that we have in modern medicine, pharmaceutical medicine, are derivative of plant products, right? And absolutely. Yes, they've been modified, and yes, they've been chemically engineered and sometimes broken down so that they extend the quote-unquote healing process, because I my mom's a conspiracy theorist, and I have taken a little bit of what of that, and I believe that there are cures for just about everything. But there's no money in curing anything. There's only money in long-term health management, medical health management. Because if you cure everything, and I feel like they figured this out when they found the there was a cure for a disease. I don't remember what it was. They found a cure for a specific disease in history, like that was just wiping out people. And then there was a huge lull in, like, sicknesses. And it was like doctors came together and they were like, hold on, we can't, like, cure this stuff too fast. And business people specifically were like, you can't cure stuff too fast. If you want to make money, then we need to spread it out over a longer period of time. Hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of treatment. But all of that rambling to say,